Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell. I'm sitting in my chair where I normally am. However, across the internet from me in a different direction, a southerly direction this time, live. You are looking live from the Television Critic Association Summer Press Tour. It's your host, Mr. Tim Goodman. Tim, you're still alive.
I am alive. I am in the Beverly Hilton.
Just amazing.
Ensconced. I'm in residence, as we say.
You are in residence. This is your, fifth day in residence?
I got here Sunday, so six days.
Day in residence. Wow. But who's counting?
Only the fourth day of the press tour is 6 days if you're for me in the hotel.
Miles,
but who's counting?
Miles to go before you sleep.
Oh, sleep. Yes. That's a rare commodity on the tour.
I bet. So what's it been doing? I know you spent a day with the good people of Netflix and a day with the good people of HBO. Is that right?
I did, yes. In fact, there was some good stuff. There was the HBO stuff was particularly good, but Netflix kicked things off. And I can go back over. You know, they had a Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt with the thing panel here, which was interesting. I will say this about Netflix. They had a few of the shows that had already been on. But that's the nature of their beast because they're like, well, we're always on. All the available episodes are there for you to look at. And they had Sense8 and Orange is the New Black, all stuff that's already been here. But for them, the things that stood out, Jason, were Narcos, a new 10-episode drama that's coming up in the end of this month, August 28th. Chelsea Handler was here. That was mildly interesting. There was a Netflix documentary panel, which was very interesting because they have a lot of good documentaries on their platform. Aziz Ansari was here for his new series, which I thought at the beginning it was just going to be a special comedy thing, but like a one-off show. But it turns out it's actually a scripted series called Master of None. And he was here. And so that was a very informative day.
Yeah, he's doing it. He's doing that with Mike Schur, his old pal from Parks and Rec, right?
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's great. I'm happy to see more stuff from those guys because that's Mike Schur's track record's been pretty good, I think.
It really has. And that looks pretty good. We saw extended clips from that. I think what was interesting about that part was that they were not going to make Ansari said something really interesting, I thought, and noted it. And that was they didn't want everybody's best bits, everybody's like funniest comment so that camera cuts to one great joke, to another great joke, blah, blah, blah. He said, I wanted it to feel more, I hate to say organic, but like a natural conversation between people. So when the people are talking, it doesn't seem like a sitcom So that was good.
I think you wrote a really nice piece, a couple of really nice dispatches from the Hollywood Reporter this week from you. I didn't mean to sound surprised, but like your Comedy Central one was really, really fantastic, and we'll get to that. But the Netflix one, I really like how it really just change comes fast. Like 3 years ago, Netflix was kind of not on anyone's radar. And at this point, they got the Emmy nominations. They got a huge amount of content. What is it? They've gotten up to like almost 500 hours of original programming this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just shocking. In 3 years, they've gone from nothing to being, you start to think this is actually what networks are going to be like in the future, right? It's going to be like this, I think.
Yeah. They ramped up very quickly. You definitely get noticed in this town, as I try to say in that piece, is that, yeah, it's like if you're the next big thing, that's people can put you at a distance and say, yeah, you're coming, your impact will come. And I tried to say that they're actually a wave that broke over everybody's head. It's not that they're here, they're dominant because of 34 Emmy nominations, which is this town takes very seriously, was more than most people. And that was kind of stunning. And
you wrote, we've been warned that the game was changing, but it's already been changed. There's like that moment of like, oh yeah, it happened. It's not, you know, Netflix is here. It's here. It's not coming. It's here.
Yeah, they're here. They have the full day. And you know what? There's a lot of very established cable channels that do not get their own full day. Huh. They get, I mean, even HBO gets 3 hours. So it's kind of interesting how they got their spot. And, Hulu's – I mean, I'm sorry, not Hulu, but Amazon's going to be here too. They have a pretty big chunk of a day. And just those two, August 3rd is when Rosanna Amazon gets there. But this, just those two together will tell you that the streaming thing is huge. And I just tried to put it into a bigger context of what it meant that there's so much content from these guys, and it's not just like, oh, you know, whatever, they've got some minor thing. They have major, major programming. So yeah, Revolution is here.
Sense8, that was a really interesting thing to see, because it's been on, it's been like streaming for a couple of months. They haven't announced a pickup for season two.
Right.
And yet they still carded the you know, producers and cast, I guess, the people to represent them up on stage. It's kind of weird, but like you said, you know, it's not like it already aired and isn't viewable anymore. And I guess this is in Netflix viewing. This is like a really long rollout. Like, it's always rolling out. It's always there. But it's still, it led to some weirdness, because it's not like they were saying, you know, what are you going to do in season two? Because they haven't been picked up.
It was very uncomfortable. We don't. the nature of the press tour is that it usually happens where they're not here. So to have one here and then not knowing is very out of. I don't think I've ever seen it before, where we could have been like a swan song kind of, and why would we have them if they were wasting our time? So the assumption was that they'll probably get a second one just because they're here. And yet the weird part about that is that Netflix knows its numbers really well. Mm-hmm. And if they want it renewed, they will let you know really quickly that it's going to be renewed. So that just, you know, hey, it's a first.
Are they trying to see if you guys writing about it in some way leads to, you know, drives viewership of it, like, you know, I don't know, like, it's weird, right? But would that be possible, that they're hoping they get some coverage and that drives viewership to the point where they do give it a green light for a season two?
Sure. I thought there might have been some that they were looking for a TCA bounce. That's mm-hmm. That certainly has happened before, and what happens is that, you know, a number of people start writing about it, and then somebody in some part of the country is like, oh yeah, I like that, and then I want to, it sounds good, I want to watch it. But for, in my sake, I never watched Sense8. I passed that on to somebody else, and even though I have heard back mixed view mm-hmm. things from it, I, after rewatching the lengthy promos that they showed us here, I definitely want to see it. And
I've seen two of them, two episodes, I think. Maybe no, I've seen three episodes. I think it's pretty good. I can understand why it would be polarizing. It's the pacing is a little bit weird, and it's trying to be a bunch of different things at once, I think. But it's certainly in my nerd circles. I keep hearing people discover it and love it, so I feel like it's got a kind of a cult thing bubbling under the surface, and that would be really interesting to see. What's the streaming equivalent of a cult show,
right?
And is it something like this where they premiere it, and then, you know, they watch as over 6 months it keeps picking up steam, and you know, maybe it's a slow build, although at some point they're gonna have to pick it up or not. They're gonna have to make that, or they're gonna lose their actors, right? So at some point they're gonna have to make a decision. But I do wonder if it's that kind of show where it's a little more culty than it is, you know, instant hit like some of the other shows they've done.
Yeah, we didn't have, or at least I didn't have insight into what the actor contracts were. I know that they're not as traditional sometimes as the other, like, 5-year model that goes on in the standard TV business, right. I should say. So I'm not sure, but that is a good question. I do think that the people at Netflix know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I don't think that this was let's just bring it out and we'll see. I think there's a plan, whether that's to see if they got a bump in coverage, which would lead to people in the next 2 or 3 weeks or a month or next month discovering it because people wrote about it here and it was generated or it went into the ether. That's a possibility. Or you're right, they could be looking at it like long-term. Like, they might see incremental gains, or because it's Netflix, they might have something where, like, they're looking for a show where if they can get people who watch a kind of show to now move them over to see if they'll watch Sense8. So, yeah, I don't think it was by accident that they were here. So
interesting.
I have hope.
So Comedy Central, mm-hmm. we should talk about it. Your other piece on The Hollywood Reporter that I'm looking at now about Comedy Central. I really love this piece because you know, Trevor Noah, lots of talk about Jon Stewart's leaving next week. Trevor Noah is coming in. He appeared in front of the TV critics, right?
He did, yes.
And there was some positive discussion of that, but at the same time, you pointed out, you know, the issues aren't, hey, how do we change the host? It's there's generational change going on, and there's structural change in the television world going on, and it's all kind of mixed up together, and, you know, this guy is in the middle of it, but it's a way more complicated situation than that.
Yeah, it's ultimately, you know, I didn't want to rush into a Trevor Noah post because I think we're all here together. We tend to do that, which is fine if it's just something generic. But I think that this was a bigger story. And, you know, it was clearly a calculated PR move. They had brought him out to do a show in Santa Monica the night before he appeared in front of us. Everybody here got invited to go to that. I didn't go to that because I kind of smelled what was up, but I also had to do other things, and I knew I would see him at his panel, which was a much more interactive way for him to deal with critics. I think he did excellent. People who went to the show came back with a lot of positive stuff, and they loaded it all up into Twitter. He did a phenomenal job when he was at Press Tour with us in front of us on the panel, and I think he made a good first impression. But as I wrote in the thing, it doesn't really matter. I just think that institutional change about the way that people watch television, people don't like the – you know, Comedy Central is the young network, which you don't really think about when you've already seen Netflix and Amazon, which are the young networks. The newbies, they don't actually have all young content. But, you know, Comedy Central paints itself as the younger, hipper kind of – you know, it's in the MTV network family. You think of it as like younger. But look, Jon Stewart – is in his 50s,
yeah.
and he's been around for 16 years. And everybody who watched that show for 16 years and who loved Jon Stewart and became, you know, part of his cult of personality, and the same thing with Stephen Colbert, those people are not necessarily going to be Trevor Noah's audience. And even if they are, which I think only a small percentage would, because my argument is twofold, that Jon Stewart's audience will leave with him. And they will seek something else. And as I point out at the end of that article, that I think that John Oliver at HBO is the big winner,
yeah,
in the whole Trevor Noah sweepstakes. And it's no fault from Trevor Noah, because I think what happens is he is a millennial magnet. And there are a lot of young 20-something people who want to see him, but they will not watch Comedy Central the way you and I watch it. They will not record it and watch it on even in a time-shifted thing. They're going to watch it the next day online for free. And that's going to be very damaging for Comedy Central.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you want to always, as these businesses want to strive for that younger demographic, it's more profitable. Except the problem is, what if the younger demographic doesn't watch television? They're not buying your product anymore. So you've got a product to sell to them, but they're not buying it. And what happens then? And how do you adapt to having something that is, you know, that it's older people on TV, but the younger people still want your content, but they're not going to watch it in your old business model? How do you do that? Every TV network's going to have to face this, but it's especially true of those who are really catering to a younger demographic, because the younger demographic kind of doesn't want to see it the way they want to show it to them.
Yeah, to me, what's interesting about the whole thing is exactly that. Like Kimmel and Fallon and those guys are really dealing with that right now. Kimmel and Fallon are pulling in so many more viewers than Carson ever had, but unfortunately, those viewers are those. A lot of those people are watching it online for free, and they're watching like sort of the best bits, you know, like stuff that goes viral and stuff that doesn't go viral but is enormously popular online. The networks don't know how to monetize that. And the weird part, I think, for Comedy Central is that I don't think they didn't think it out. I won't say that. But I think they thought there would be a transition among viewers where I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that the Jon Stewart viewers who did watch it on TV or maybe watched a clip on their computer now and then like I did or on my iPad, but mostly they watched it like they watched, you know, regular television. They recorded it. It's on their season pass.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the case with Trevor Noah's new millennial audience. I don't think so.
Yeah, I wanted one thing. I mean, you talk about John Oliver, and I think John Oliver obviously hits the sweet spot, although once a week versus four nights a week with Jon Stewart. I got to say, when I anticipate – The Daily Show, really, ever since John Oliver did his summer stint, The Daily Show's kind of come back into my life, and it's the sort of thing – I turn it on like, well, I'm eating lunch the next day, stuff like that. I time shift it and do it that way a lot. Or you know, we're getting ready to go to bed, and we want to watch one more thing, but we don't want it to be too long. You watch the first couple segments of The Daily Show. when I think about what we're going to do when Jon Stewart's gone, I start to think, I think I'm gonna shop with Stephen Colbert's Late Show. Actually,
yeah.
I think that may be where we for that thing that's always kind of on tap, that it's not a must watch, but it's always there if you want to flip something on for 20 minutes. And so I've got John Oliver and Colbert coming back. I think he's going to scoop up not just his audience, but some of the Jon Stewart audience might gravitate back toward him.
I think so, too, because it will be there in traditional television form. Yeah. And you want to see what he's doing. I think there's an enormous amount of interest and intrigue in what Colbert is going to do when he comes back. But my point was, this is not Trevor Noah's fault at all. It's just a generational
shift. It's like structural in the media business. So on I was on a podcast a couple weeks ago with John Gruber, who's a big Mac blogger, well known. Mm-hmm. We were talking about business models in the media industry in like publishing and websites and magazines and newspapers and things like that. As you and I, as veterans of the print world, who are no longer doing things on paper. Although I guess THR has a magazine, but you know,
yes, we have a lovely glossy.
It is beautiful glossy magazine, but so much of what you do is on digital now.
Yes,
but this is I wanted to mention that because this is related to that, which is it's not as if the people aren't there, and it's not as if there isn't money that wants to reach people and market to those people. The challenge is like, how do you make it all connect where you've got Trevor Noah and you've got people who want to see him and like his stuff or any of these other hosts that have appeal to a young audience, and the marketers sure as hell want to reach those people. But they can't do what they used to do, which is buy spots on traditional TV. So, you know, I feel like in the end, it will work out. It's not like we're going to see a conflagration and all this stuff is going to go out of business and, oh God, you know, everything's ruined. Because the money's there, the people are there, the audience is there, the marketers want to reach the people and spend money to do it. But how? And that's the part where it's kind of like, you know, nobody really knows. And so, they might lump a lot of expectations onto Trevor Noah. But, you know, this isn't about his content. It's about, like, how does Comedy Central find a way to make money with his content in a world where his audience is not watching TV?
Exactly.
Know.
And I think that's the, you know, they can solve that a little bit. They had Comedy Central had a lot of success, and they tinkered around a little bit with Key and Peele, which for the longest time was really being watched primarily online.
Yeah.
And so they got around that with some ads because you had to make some money on that. But they also just very cleverly, and it's just a simple solution. I'm not sure that'll work with Trevor Noah or any other show, but when you get a show as big and as popular and you want to, people want to see more skits, the Key and Peele just said, hey, look, I know you're watching this online, but we're not showing you our best stuff. You want to see our best stuff, you got to watch the TV show. So you can control what actually gets out there. That's the next phase to me, controlling what gets put on, what you release, and controlling where and how you can see it and how many ads will be attached to it.
Hmm. Any other stuff out of Comedy Central, or was Trevor Noah the main focus?
He was pretty much that. They had some MTV stuff in there, which was I just could not deal with. So that was it. Then Netflix came in, and that was a big day. National Geographic was here. They had a pretty successful run. I will say that they have a series coming up called Saints and Strangers that they're filming. But I only note Nat Geo as a channel I love. They do a lot of amazing things, but I only note them for our purposes, Jason, because shockingly enough, this is our times of confusion. Mm. National Geographic, excuse me, is pushing hard into the scripted game.
Scripted Nat Geo, eh?
Yep. And so Saints and Strangers, which has Vincent Kartheiser, who was Pete on
Mad Men.
Yeah. And a very strong cast is going to be in that. It's about pilgrims coming over. But then there's other stuff that's coming that's pretty major. They have big players, and they've got big producers, and they want A-list actors. And I put a tweet out just like, you know, I love you, Nat Geo, but please don't make scripted programming. I can't.
Yeah.
I don't have time for it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. HBO, we should talk about HBO. What did they have? I saw you talking about the various promises that will one day be kept before the sun swells into and engulfs the earth, like that David Chase is going to come back to HBO at some point. And
yes, he's been working on a show from 2009. That's not happening. Larry David has apparently...
He's got a notebook, I hear.
He has a notebook, which is a marked improvement. After every 6 months, we check in with HBO, and they're like, nope, I haven't talked to him. Nope, haven't seen him. He'll be ready when he's ready. This time it was, I actually saw him on the street. He pulled a notebook out and said, guess what this is? It's the next season. And then never heard from him again. So who knows with those guys. The interesting thing about HBO is twofold, you know, for what's happening for them. And that is, I'm reviewing Show Me a Hero, which is coming up, which is a miniseries. So it's very good. It's very eat your vegetables, but very good. From David Simon, who did The Wire. Mm. The trailers for one of my favorite shows last year, The Leftovers, was really interesting as they reboot this series. I think they showed me a little too much in the pile, in the lengthy clip, because I haven't seen any. No one, I don't think anybody's seen any episodes yet. But there's a lot of reveals, but that's just for us. I'm confident that The Leftovers will be very good. But what came out of that, Jason, to me, with the most interesting part of it, because there was stuff about Ballers, which is a fine show that's already been renewed, and there was something about Dahl and M, which I, you know, Emily Mortimer's show. I could just, you know, it's basically a vanity project, and who cares? I have no reason to watch that show or wonder why it even got a second season. But the two trailers that were amazing, and I'm talking amazing in the point of like, oh my god, I need to see more of that. And we saw a lot. These are long trailers, at which they will not show anybody else, by the way. I'll just add that out right now. An amazing trailers for the Westworld. It looks really great. And I'm so excited. It's not just a remake of the movie. They've turned it into a series, and they've changed a lot. It's a whole new interpretation of the Westworld idea. It looks so good. I swear to God, I think you're going to love it. And the other thing that looked exceptionally good was this thing called Vinyl, which is a period piece with countless big time stars, about a record label in the 70s and 80s and coming through that period. And I gotta say, that looked amazing. And both of them, I was at the end, I was like, holy shit, that's 2016. Both of those shows are like, immediately I checked those boxes. I cannot wait for the screeners on both those.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so I mean that's a great accomplishment for HBO, which is kind of backpedaling because people are slamming True Detective. But as I noted on Twitter the other day, and I'm a big proponent of bashing on True Detective, but they have a lot of other really good shows, and they also have a lot of other like Ballers. It's fun and it's entertaining, but they have a lot of really good stuff, like, you know, obviously Game of Thrones, et cetera, et cetera. But this shows you that they're definitely reloading for the future, and that's a sign of a healthy channel.
So Game of Thrones, I sent you a tweet back about this. I think earlier this year they were like, well, you know, maybe 7 seasons, and it sounds like that is already out the window, and they're like, well, 8 seasons, maybe more. Like, they're just they keep this time scale just keeps on sliding wider and wider, doesn't it?
Yeah, to me it was funny how you can have a room full of people who are listening to the same thing and then pull all these different variations out of it. I will tell you, there's definitely going to be 8 seasons. And a lot of people said, 8 seasons and then out. He did not say 8 seasons and out. He basically said 8 seasons for sure. That's probably what the creators want it to go. And we'll keep discussing and pushing them from there, which tells me we want 10.
Yeah.
And right now we're 8 for sure, and the door on this is not even remotely closed. So I think everybody needs to keep their hopes up, because it's definitely going to go 8 for sure. But I think it'll go farther.
I have to guess, you know, again, just reading between the lines, it seems to me like Benioff and Weiss came to them and said, like last year, and said, we think maybe 7 seasons. And they're like, all right, you know, let us know, keep us informed. And then they made season 5, and they came back and said, we think maybe 8 seasons. And they feel like, all right, guys, whatever, keep doing what you're doing. We love it. You're great. You know, and we'll stay here. And then, you know, so next year, do they come back and say, okay, 9, right? Right. They just like let these guys just kind of, because I get the sense with every season of Game of Thrones that they realize, oh geez, there's a lot of story here. Let's push that off a little bit, and everything just kind of keeps spreading out. And I think HBO, you're right, HBO is just like, whatever. Just you want to make more? We'd love you to make more. Just keep on making it, boys. So
that is very true, and it's actually very astute about how HBO works. They're very clever. They're like, okay, you know, they're very artist involved, and they what they do understand is that these guys put a lot of time in it, and a lot of times when you're doing the renegotiation, you've just come off a finished season and you're exhausted. And I think what they're saying is, yeah, okay, that's just exactly what you said. And then they realize that once you've allowed them to extend it a season or two, that by the time they make those two, A, they realize that they need more stories. So they come back and say, yeah, we need a ninth. Right? And HBO's like, yeah, we kind of knew you would, but we didn't want to say it. And the other thing is that, you know, it just – I think that I've been covering television for a long time, and I can tell you that what often happens, I've heard this story so many times. People are like, well, we're burnt out. The story seems like it's coming to a natural end. This seems very real to us. And then just when you think, okay, well, I guess that's two more and out, a year goes by and they'll come back and say, you know what? We are reinvigorated and we want to go farther. Or they'll say, yeah, we thought we were done, but then we were sitting around one day and we came up with this brilliant idea and now we're all super psyched to go more. So I wouldn't give up on it just yet. I think it may get to 10, which would be very funny.
Yeah, 10 seasons of 10 episodes. That I actually – one of my pet theories with these guys is that they're going to get to the last season and say, all right, this is the last season. This is going to be – we're going to wrap it up. And then about halfway through, there's going to be a press release saying that it's going to be an extended last season. It's going to run 15 episodes and it's going to be split in two. Like they're going to – even at the end, they're going to be like, oh, geez. We still have more to tell, and they're just going to keep on extending it. Because I think they constantly underestimate how much plot they've got to work through. And I think HBO will give them all the runway they want. They just have to figure it out for themselves. But
yeah, and I think that, you know, it's a competitive industry, and you want to be in the headlines. You want to make money. You also want to do something quality driven. And I think if you look around, if these, Benioff and company, if they look around, they're going to see like, okay, obviously these shows are not in the same level, but you know, History Channel's doing Vikings, BBC America Today just brought in the Last Kingdom folks to talk about that world, which looks very, there's no fantasy element to it, but it looks very Game of Thrones-ish with all the decor and the swords and the blood. So all these shows are coming and more people are kind of tapping into that. It's fun. It's fun to make shows. And I think that, in the competitive nature of it, people will just like, well, we're the best. If we were to leave right now, somebody will just come and just be an inferior product of ours. So pride will keep them on the air.
Yeah.
So it's all good. I think the viewers are winners in all of this.
I think so. You mentioned The Leftovers. So that's a show that mixed reviews, but is coming back, and I know you liked it. So
I love it.
So
yeah.
looking, and is that coming back this fall?
Yeah, it's coming back. I think it's either October or
all right, great
September or October, and it's. I will say, and I love Damon Lindelof, and it's funny how he just seems impossible to not get out of his own way of the past, right? He doesn't want to talk about Lost and stuff, but. The funny part is, it's no longer there's no longer a secret. You know, the idea was the show was based on one book that Tom Perrotta wrote, and there's an ending, and there's a very definitive ending to it. And Lindelof said last, and I would urge everybody, if you haven't seen The Leftovers, it's dark,
it's sad.
Check it out. It's dark and it's sad. And the whole idea was, the first season was about loss. There's a lot of weirdness in there as well. There is almost no humor. There's tragedy and loss and darkness, which I love all of that stuff. So I ate it up. But they went out and said, "Look, you're not going to find out why this happened. We're going to deal with it in, you know, the sudden departure and 2% of the population has been taken from the planet. We don't know what happened. We're going to deal with the aftermath of that." Well, what's really interesting. Jason, and you would have loved to have been in the room yesterday because, you know, we got our first good look at Leftovers Season 2, and there is an implied second rapture-like event, although they didn't show enough to hint that it really was, but they showed enough to make you certainly think that something was happening again. And Damon Lindelof said, yeah, the whole premise is everybody basically – tries to go to this one place on that. That's the premise of season two. Everybody tries to go to this one place in the United States where there was a little town in Texas where there was 9,000 people and not single person was taken. And so there's the illusion of safety and everybody goes there to restart their lives, which is a great concept for a story. But so that happened and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of lost-ish in its own way. Mm. And then one of the main characters from last season, and now it's not, you know, it's no long, if you didn't watch it, it'll be kind of a spoiler, but I wouldn't even say the person's name. One of the main characters from last season dies in the first season of Leftovers. And yet she pops up in the second, which is very like Jack's dad.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so when we saw her in the trailer, people were like, wow, okay. So you know, Lindelof was here having to sort of explain how is a dead person back? And not just back, like, you know, as a character, it's the same character, and she's moved herself to Texas somehow. So there's a lot of interesting Lost-like elements, and, you know, it's all poor Damon. He's always going to – but he deals in mystery, and he loves that kind of genre. So – but I loved the first season, and I have high hopes for season two.
Great. BBC America, you mentioned. Anything I know that you were trying to decode Peter Capaldi's Britishisms. They were they did the Doctor Who session via satellite because, as we talked about, you can't come to Comic-Con and TCA from England, right? So you do one, right, and then they satellite it in. But apparently the crossing guards are, what, the lollipop man? Is that what they're called?
Well, it was everything kind of got derailed. As you noted, I put a tweet saying, okay, here comes Doctor Who, a show I will not make any tweets about because I live in fear of making a mistake, yep, about the, you know, mythology, which I would have. So
of course,
I'm sure a lot of very interesting things happened, and you follow other people on Twitter, and I'm sure you may have figured it out by now. Sure, they've already tweeted it out.
Other TV critics have decoded the
Doctor Who watched it, and I actually tweeted out the official BBC America Doctor Who trailer, so that's out there. But I didn't try to figure it out. But somewhere in the middle of all of this, there was a joke that Peter Capaldi was making along with his co-star, who
Jenna Coleman.
Yes, Jenna Coleman. That's it.
She's lovely.
Yeah, she's very lovely. I love British women, and I love when they say brilliant. It's brilliant. But they were making a joke about lollipops and. We were like, what? Lollipop man? What is this thing? But it turns out that in England, that's just a crossing guard.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the joke was. I totally didn't get it. So I threw it out there for all my British followers to explain to me what it was. And we had a good time with that. But Peter Capaldi was very funny. You could tell that he just, I'm sure, was gritting through his teeth to have to do this. and then after a while, it just became very funny. About it, why he was via satellite and had a good time, a good sport with everybody. But it looks good. That's all I can say. Look, I have no idea what's going on, but it looks good. I'm sure you can tell us, Jason, at some other point.
Yep. And anything else? Any other good? I mean, you mentioned some more swords and blood from BBC America. Did we get any? It's the summer press tour, and they just ran Orphan Black, so presumably nothing about that. Any other stuff that they've got coming that looked interesting?
That was the big one. And
all right.
So we're only here. This is only the fourth day, and I'll be down here until August 14th. So
yes,
we will recheck in
so much more.
Much more networks and channels coming up.
I'm just again going to point out that after all those years at the San Francisco Chronicle, where the equipment came to LA, your record is completely spotless for this edition of the TV Talk Machine.
It's kind of amazing, right?
It is incredible. Every time I think, God, he's so busy. He's never going to, you know, he's not going to have the time. And look, here it is, a podcast
about television. I raced through my lunch and raced back to my room, picked up my stuff in the ballroom, raced through the hotel, got into the elevator, and got here just in time to do this. And this is number 45.
45. Yeah.
Consecutive weeks of, international same day release.
Yeah, exactly right. Like we're like Netflix. We're the Netflix of podcasting.
Well, before we go, I should note to you that you would have died laughing because Netflix said international same day release like five times.
I'm sure.
I kept saying, "Oh, that's funny." That's very funny. Or I wanted to say, yes, just like TV Talk Machine.
That's right. They're very much alike. They've got more Emmy nominations than we do so far.
So far.
But you never know what might happen. Well, it's great to I encourage everybody out there to follow you, Bastard Machine. You got to get a lot of tweets, though. You got to be prepared because it's the hail of TCA tweets that come.
It's overwhelming,
but it's fascinating to watch that. And I actually especially love it where things are not super involved for you, and so then you kind of like take that little skewed approach and start noticing weird things that are going on in TCA, and those are beautiful to watch.
Plus, we have TCA Bingo.
Yeah, I saw you tweeted out the picture for the TCA Bingo.
Yeah, so we can play along.
That's very nice. Very, very good. All right, well, have a good week in residence.
Well, thank you, and I will. And you and I will do 46 because I got to keep my spotless Los Angeles record going.
Yeah. So we'll check in toward the end of next week as you remain in residence.
I do.
At the Beverly Hilton.